This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Priyanka Shankar. In this week's special program during the holiday season, the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, looks at what a drought, earthquake, or pandemic can do to economies in sub-Saharan Africa. Natural disasters hold back a country's ability to produce, leading to an economic slowdown, according to two top economists from the IMF. Sub-Saharan Africa has been especially prone, and natural disasters have adversely impacted the overall economic performance of the region. The IMF argues that the Ebola epidemic in West Africa and the 2016 droughts induced by El Nino in parts of eastern and southern Africa have cost economies and societies dear. Here's Bruce Edwards' conversation with IMF economists Marshall Mills and Vimal Thakur.
The human dimension of the natural disasters is what is most compelling, because very often it is the most vulnerable segments of the society who are unable to ensure or prepare adequately against these disasters. So the rescue missions are very important to help them through the early stages of the shocks. What we try to do in this study is to look at how these disasters impact the economy. And what we find is there are clear short-term impacts and long-term impacts. Let me just walk you through a bit as to how we see things feeding through. You have a disaster, think about it, a storm, an earthquake. What would usually happen is you would have the immediate impact arising from the destruction of the infrastructure, of the loss of lives, which would lead to a slowdown in economic activity. Over time, or in the next few days, what you will see happen is the country's capacity is restrained in terms of its ability to produce. So it has to import more goods. And this can create some balance of payments pressures. There can also be pressures on the government in terms of having to deal with the immediate impact of the crisis, which can lead to higher spending. And the economic slowdown that arises leads to lower revenue. So there are some fiscal pressures that emerge as well.
Marshall, do you know for sure that climate change is in fact hindering development in some of these countries?
We do know some facts about effects that are happening now. We have seen a rise in average temperatures across Africa and globally already of a half percent degree of Celsius. And we've also been able to see an increase in the volatility of rainfall. So these are facts. As to the causation, is it being caused by global warming? We rely on climate scientists to address that question. And the International Panel on Climate Change has determined that climate change is increasing the severity and frequency of natural disasters. And that does fit with the facts that we can see. Is this hindering development? We strongly believe that it will hinder development, especially if there's not efforts made to adapt to this change. We've seen historically that rising temperatures reduce output in Africa. And so this could lower it by as much as 1 percentage point of GDP in the future without any efforts to adapt to it. There'll also be an impact on agricultural productivity. Africa's a region that relies on rain-fed agriculture for much of the output, especially, as my colleague Vimal said, vulnerable segments of society. So this will hit output and hit the most vulnerable in particular. So these are clear effects. Rising sea levels will certainly have an impact on coastal countries and island countries, and increase in flooding, one of the most prevalent types of disasters in Africa. So yes, we do believe, based on the climate science, that it is affecting natural disasters and that it will hinder development.
And Vimal, you suggest in the report that sub-Saharan African region is being harder hit than other regions in the world. Is this more about them experiencing more occurrences, more natural disasters, or is it more about the limited ability of these countries to deal with disaster as compared to other regions?
Indeed, it is more about the ability of the countries to deal with the disasters and prepare adequately. So when we look at the numbers, Africa is at par with the rest of the world based on the population and land area in terms of occurrence. But what we do find is when these disasters do occur, they have a much bigger impact in sub-Saharan Africa. And we try to understand what are some of the factors leading to that. We find three main factors. First, Africa is still predominantly heavily dependent on the agricultural sector. And these agricultural sector are largely rain-fed. So when you have a drought, as a lot of the South African region, countries in the region have been experiencing, these tend to have to impact a much larger segment of the population. It also reduces the opportunities for jobs. And again, it leads to an increase in food insecurity. The second point which I want to touch upon is the fact that the financial sector in Africa, despite the development in recent years, is still underdeveloped in that for large segments of the population do not have access to credit, do not have access to insurance, and for these people, they do not have an ability to insure against these kind of events. The other issue is Africa accounts for about 40% of the global poor. And when you have a drought or you have a flood, what happens is the number of people living in poverty tends to increase. And we do indeed find that these natural disasters are associated with both an increase in poverty and inequality in sub-Saharan Africa.
So is it realistic to think that with all these economic challenges that most of the countries in the region are experiencing, especially right now, is it realistic to think that they can better prepare for these natural disasters? And how does this new regional economic outlook suggest that they do that? Marshall?
Indeed, that is the crux of the challenge these countries are facing with natural disasters and climate change. As Vimal explained, their lack of adaptive capacity makes them vulnerable. But there are ways to get around this challenge. In our chapter, we propose a gradualist, low-cost approach, beginning small, beginning right away. We shouldn't say that we can't adapt easily and therefore not try. We need to start with something that's affordable and feasible given the financial and administrative capacities. Examples would include small-scale water management investments, cisterns, irrigation, and adapting infrastructure is very expensive in general, but countries can start by focusing on the most vital infrastructure. For example, schools, two countries, Malawi and Madagascar, have invested in resilient schools that can protect communities and particularly children.
What do you mean by resilient schools?
In Madagascar, they've built schools that can withstand winds of up to 230 kilometers an hour. And these schools can protect the children and in some cases entire communities from these types of storms. Obviously, it's a building standard that's way beyond normal standards, and it costs more, but it could pay off in terms of protecting the communities and surviving the storms. So there are ways to begin this process of cost-effective adaptation.
Are you confident that they can find the funds, given rising deficits and falling revenues these days?
There is a challenge there too, but there's reason to be hopeful there as well. The amount of resources that external donors are providing is rising in this area, and there's increasing success in these countries in mobilizing resources, revenue, domestic borrowing. And in fact, one response to climate change that the global community is considering is more taxation of emissions. And that in itself could generate some resources that could be devoted to adaptation.
Bruce Edwards talking to Marshall Mills and Vimal Thakur from the IMF. That's it from UN in Africa for 2016. From all of us here at UN headquarters, have a very happy 2017.